A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration. Collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Pierre-Philippe Chevigny. He is a young filmmaker, I'm going to say a young, incredibly talented filmmaker who is interested, as he says, in social issues. And his new film, Rebel, is getting a lot of attention. And it's won several awards, many awards, actually. The Golden Owl Award at Tirana International Film Festival, and now makes it an Oscar-qualifying film. I think Pierre-Philippe mentions that it's now been seen at over 100 film festivals around the world. And the beautiful thing about the film is that not only is it a beautiful film, it's an important film. It's one of those that sort of brings everything kind of together in a very holistic way. So it's interesting, it's important, it's going to raise some questions for you, but it's also, as I said, a beautiful, beautiful piece to watch. So it's a short, it's about 16 minutes long. Pierre-Philippe tells us in the interview, the beginning and the end, where you can see it, but it's on YouTube, CBC Gem Canada. It's you can pretty much, as he says, see it everywhere, which is unusual for a film on face-to-face, or at least for, especially for a newer film and a short film. So one of the benefits of this virtual world we're living in now, we talk about right-wing extremism. We talk about the balance in trying to have that conversation, and about, you know, about being politically active and how film can foster debate. And we talk a little bit around whether or not film can actually, you know, create change. But one of the things that we talk about, and certainly talk about a fair bit here on Face to Face, is this idea of empathy and how storytelling has the ability to allow us at least to step into that empathetic kind of response or understanding of others who we don't normally hang out with, and we can step into other communities. I think, you know, what's really beautiful about Rebel is there's this there's this hope in the next generation. And Pierre-Philippe tells us this story through the eyes of a family and a group of people, but also through the eyes of a young boy. And children play a very important role in this film. We talk about our surroundings and about how we're kind of oblivious to them, but they're having an impact. And we get into nature versus nurture, and about fear and a lack of education, and about social media, you know, acting as echo chambers. And Pierre-Philippe talks a little bit about that. And when he started to do some of his research, he stepped into some of these groups on social media and spent a fair bit of time there. And very revealing, as you will hear in the film. So this is a film for me that is going to be a favorite for me in 2021, I guess now, but for 2020. Yeah, take the time to watch this and check out the link in the bio. You'll see it there. If you found us through iTunes, head over to facetofacelive.ca or davidpecklive.com. You'll find more information there, not only about what I do as a consultant and as a speaker, but also over 540 interviews, access there to people making a difference through storytelling and writing and so on, with a real focus on film of late, where you know film ideas and social change meet. So please sign up for the newsletter. We've got a new website that's coming up live, and hopefully you're on the new website right now. And if you will, subscribe to us on YouTube, give us a like or two there, and please socially mediate us. What we'd really love, though, is a review on iTunes. Or Spotify or something along those lines. But iTunes reviews are really important for a whole lot of reasons. So stay tuned. Don't touch that dial. We've got an important, interesting, fun interview coming up with Pierre-Philippe Chevigny talking about his new film, Rebel. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest here with us today. We have Pierre-Philippe Chevigny here to talk about his new film, Rebel. But actually, I don't think that's the correct French title of the film. Pierre-Philippe, thank you for joining me here today on Face to Face. Such a pleasure to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me. So yeah, in French, it's called Recrue, which means recruit.
Yes.
But my favorite title, my actual original title was Rebel. It just so happens that there's two recent movies in Quebec that were called Rebel. So it wasn't like a very commercially viable choice to name it Rebel as well. So we decided to use two different titles, but my favorite one is Rebel. So
it's just to avoid confusion, sort of, you went more for the Quebec audience than a global audience.
Yeah, that's right.
Congratulations. Can I say that it's a beautiful film? It is a beautiful film. It is a unsettling piece that you've put together here. This, a 16-minute short. Congratulations and thank you. I loved it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
So let's set some context. Obviously, you know, we're hoping people can see this film, and for me as a podcaster, what's unusual, one of the things I've decided, Pierre-Philippe, is I've been doing this about 8 years, is to try to start focusing on films that people can actually access easily. I've interviewed a lot of filmmakers over the years, and I'm so glad about it, but it's really hard sometimes, especially with small, to see the films. Right? With small independent productions. But we've got some great news for our face-to-face audience. Tell us where they can see Recru or a Rebel, please.
It's really everywhere now. It's if you're in Canada, it's on CBC Jam. If you're in Quebec, it's on EC2 TV. If you're in the States, you can watch it on YouTube, on Vimeo Staff Picks, on Short of the Week. And same for everywhere else. HBO Europe as well, if you're in Eastern Europe. Arte, if you're in France. So it's really everywhere now.
Wow, that's amazing. Nicely done. Congrats on that, too. And I think you mentioned, too, just before we hit the record button, you've just crossed the 100 film festival line as well. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. 100 festivals. I honestly cannot believe it. Like, it's amazing. To me that was like the end goal for me, to get as many festivals as we could, and to just reach that level is really, really, really awesome.
So how much context can you provide for our audience without giving away too much about it? And also, let's tell everyone, there's a bit of Oscar buzz around this film as well, right? Are you allowed to talk about that?
Well, I mean, we qualified for the Oscars, so that doesn't mean like we're not nominated or anything, but it's eligible to be submitted for the Best Short Film Award, because we won the Oscar qualifying award at Tirana International Film Festival a few months back. It's Rebels, basically a film about the rise of right-wing extremism, specifically in Quebec. For the past 5 years or so, there's been an increase in these sorts of weird militia groups, some things that we really did not have ever before. You know, Quebec has always been pretty left-leaning nationalistic, but very left-leaning overall. And there's, it kind of echoes what's happening in the States also with the alt-right movement, like these groups of people that organize together and, you know, go out and train with survivalist techniques in the woods and start shooting guns and that kind of stuff that exists also in Quebec. And like in 2017, there's been a migrant surge in Quebec. A lot of people started crossing the border at Roxham Road, and that really lit the fire of right-wing extremism. And that's the point where they really, really started to become very active and very present also in the mainstream media. And so I wanted to make a film about it because it was like everything I do, all of my short films are always inspired by social issues. And that's definitely one of the issues that was worrying to me as I started doing research and eventually became Rebel.
So why make a narrative film about this this young family rather than do a doc about this issue? Because on a certain level, it almost seems like that would make more sense, right? In a certain way.
So the thing about documentary is that you need to have like the consent of people that you film. And I did, like, at first I wasn't sure what I was going to do. It could have turned out as a documentary, but one of the reasons I turned to fiction is because I reached out to these people and I said, you know, I'm interested in the subject, and I didn't want to pretend like I agreed with them. I wanted to be like very clear and transparent, letting them know that I disagreed with them, but I was still interested in hearing their perspective.
So you mean you reached out to some of these right-wing groups to actually get to know them I mean, a bit of research, I guess.
Yeah. At first, it could have turned out just as pure research, or I could have done a documentary eventually, but they turned me down, obviously, because I didn't support their ideas and I didn't want to pretend either, so... And so starting at that point, I started doing research, and most of my research was done on social media, you know, just subscribing to all of their group pages and following them. And all of those people, they tend to do a lot of video blogging, like, you know, filming themselves in their cars and just running on for, you know, 15 minutes and just post that online. And that was the basis of my research, basically. And I decided to incorporate all of the stuff that I researched about to make a fiction with it.
You're a pretty young filmmaker, it seems to me. I think I'm old enough to say that. I hope I'm allowed to say that. You're inspired by social issues. Tell me why. Why is that? Does that have anything to do with your upbringing or the books you read, the undergraduate degree that you did, et cetera? I'm really interested by that.
I come from a somewhat modest but very politically active family, for sure. And also I went to, like, in Quebec, we have CEGEP, which is like the college you go to before university. And the program that I took was a film program at the CEGEP de Saint-Laurent, which is basically a school in Montreal. And their program is very based on social, political issues. And so that for sure has influenced the way I approach filmmaking. But in a way, it's kind of like the meeting point between my two passions. Like, I'm very interested about politics in real life.
Sure.
And I'm also very interested about filmmaking and storytelling. So I try to, like, whatever I do is like the meeting point between those two points of interest.
It's so interesting. It's so fascinating. I mean, do you see yourself at some point, someday, getting more politically involved? And I don't mean just as a filmmaker or as a critique, but, you know, interesting about Marc Garneau and the, you know, foreign affairs, a former astronaut, you know?
Yeah.
Isn't it fascinating, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, I wouldn't like shut the door entirely, but it's not something that I specifically aim for. I know a few of my friends are like, they really want to get involved politically eventually, but I tend to be like really shy and not very good in a debate setting.
Right.
So like, to me, writing.
So you might not be too good in the House of Commons then.
No, yeah. Right. Yeah. Like sitting down and writing a script is like a much more controlled environment, and I can really, really take the time to think about what I want to say. So
Pierre-Philippe, if somebody's yelling at you over your shoulder, it might be kind of hard to write the script. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I totally get it. You know, it's interesting. The reason I asked that question is because I am always fascinated. I've been doing international development work for many years, as my listeners will know, traveled around the world, and I continue to have this passion to affect some kind of change, and a social change, a political change, you know, changing the way people see the world, perspective, and so on. And I was interviewing Martin Parnell and Kate McKenzie yesterday about a marathon that takes place every year in Afghanistan. And they've started something called the Secret Marathon. It's about gender equality. It's about access, but it's the metaphor, and it's a doc, But the metaphor again is this, you know, marathon, pushing the boulder, mm-hmm. the myth of Sisyphus, you know, it's about patience and resilience. And so that's, those types of things have always resonated with me. And I'm always fascinated, especially when a narrative filmmaker or a narrative storyteller talks about that being sort of, you know, important to them.
Yeah, you don't have to be an elected official like to do politics. You can, you know, there's tons of activists out there that
absolutely.
Do work that really initiate change. And, you know, I don't have the pretension to believe that like film can actually initiate change, but it can for sure foster debates. And that's a good starting point to me. And that's the reason I do films. I try to aim to get debates going so we can actually discuss the, you know, the social issues that I think are relevant to the times.
Tell me about that fostering of debate, because I agree with you, and I'd like to think that film does, storytelling affects change. I mean, that's all we have, that's all we are, it seems to me, you know, mm-hmm. when you look back through history, our stories to tell, and that's, I mean, that's Thomas King, and that's Richard Wagamese, famous indigenous writer, you know, stories are meant to heal, and so on. Mm-hmm. Do you think someone say, let's just go polarized here, let's go dualistic, right, left, and sort of middle, down the road, could this film appeal to somebody on, say, the other side? Would they be able to get through the full film, or are they going to go, wow, this is just so not cool, this is so not fair, this is a misrepresentation? Do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah
totally. In other words, how do you change people's minds?
Yeah, well, in a way, I think my film is certainly left-leaning, but it tries very hard to be nuanced.
Sure.
Especially in the way it depicts like the right-wing militia. They're not fire-breathing dragons. They're not like neo-Nazi skinheads. Like the main character is a father, and he obviously loves his son. And I'm not trying to demonize him, even though I don't agree with what he does, you know? And of course, like, if you're really, really, you know, far down the rabbit hole, you're not going to enjoy Rebel for sure. But somebody who like would be like middle of the road, like maybe insecure about immigration, maybe Rebel can make you think about your beliefs and possibly, you know, for sure feel empathy for the I'm about to spoil something here.
Right. It's so hard, right? It's so hard to talk about it without spoiling it, and especially because it's a short film.
Yeah, and yes, there's something that happens midpoint in the film. And anyway, you're gonna, if you ever get to watch it, you're gonna experience empathy. That's for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's Roger Ebert and many others. I think Adam Egoyan said, you know, the theaters are the cathedrals of our time. And I think he was riffing off an academic. And then, of course, Roger Ebert said, you know, movies are empathy-making machines. And I think that's really true, this idea of story. How do you step into somebody else's shoes? And right. I think you really do that beautifully. And you do that beautifully for both, if I can say, for both sides of this debate. Mm-hmm. And I hesitate to do that because it's more nuanced than that. There's so much going on. I love too, by the way, Pierre-Philippe, how you start with the boy, you end with the boy, father's out of focus in both shots. I would imagine that was pretty intentional. And for me, ultimately, for all the dark subject matter in this film, it really is hopeful.
Right. It is meant to be hopeful for sure. It's about basically a kid who grows up in an extremist family, and he gets to witness something that really triggers his understanding of the situation. You know, the main idea behind Rebel was like following one of the big demonstrations that La Meute, which is one of the militia groups that we had in Quebec, and they did a big demonstration in Quebec City, and the front page of one of the newspapers had the picture of a 6 or 7 year old boy that was waving a flag with their logo on it.
Right.
And I thought to myself, like, that kid doesn't understand the politics behind all of this. He's just following his parents, you know, and because he grew up within the movement, he never got to question it. So I figure like it would be interesting to tell the story of a boy who's also oblivious to like the right and wrong questions about, you know, the environment in which he's growing up, and just witnessing something that triggers his understanding of it all. And then all of a sudden things change. So by the midpoint of the film, like we follow this six-year-old boy that just goes through a profound change of belief just because he witnesses something. And I thought it'd be interesting to put the viewer in those shoes, which is why I chose to film it with a very, very close handheld camera. And you know, the background is always out of focus. You don't really see what's going on around there because you're following a character that's oblivious to his surroundings. And so little by little, as the main character starts to understand what's going on around him, then you, the viewer, get to look all around you, and then the film becomes more edited. So really the goal was to have the viewer experience that same moment of realization at the same time as the kid.
Yeah. I love how you say the main character is oblivious, and yet there's a shift, and yet he's paying so much attention. And being affected, right? Yeah. Oblivious, and yet being very affected by everything, well, the empathy.
He's oblivious,
right?
in the first 5 or 6 right, minutes right. of the film, and then he starts understanding, and right. now he pays attention.
It's like there's this shock of recognition, right?
Right, exactly. And then, you know, the idea was to have the viewer have the same shock.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. You mention about him. You know, you didn't want to demonize the father. And I think what's really interesting about what we would call, I suppose, the two of us, an extreme, right wing group, a militia group, on some level, kind of dangerous, on many levels, kind of dangerous. And yet, you know, the father clearly has a deep love for his son. And I think there's this almost this willingness for those of us who want to understand to just polarize, you know, right. Oh, that's wrong. That's right. They're evil. They're not the left, the right, and so on. And I just wonder and with all that's going on around the world, you know, here in Canada, the US, UK, everywhere, the division that seems to be growing, and COVID is not helping. That's for sure. Just reading a report yesterday about how, you know, the rich people of the world are going to be vaccinated probably first. Sure. And we're starting to see more evidence of that already. How do we start healing those? I mean, any thoughts on that?
I think a lot of it is a symptom of social media, because it creates echo chambers, and you're only ever, you know, shown the opinions that you agree with.
Right,
and
right.
That's when I did my research for the first time, I was really exposed to the opposite opinion, because now I had all of these friends in my Facebook feed, and then like the algorithms got really confused at some point, and I started like getting more of the alternate opinion. And really what I found out, you know, the reason the father is not a demon is because what I found out is that most people who follow these groups, they're not neo-Nazi skinheads, you know, and that's what's worrying about it. That's they're usually everyday normal people, and I could recognize like my aunt and my uncle, and you know, the everyday family guys and soccer moms, and you know, and they would take their kids along to demonstrations like it's some kind of family friendly event.
Well, the face painting scene in the film is, I mean, there's so many moments like this, Pierre Philippe, that are just so lovely but deeply disturbing.
And that's what I witnessed during my research, and some of the people who saw the film thought it was over the top, or I was exaggerating, that there could be, you know, that people could be you know, human and very lovely with their kids, and then support those ideas. But that's what I witnessed on social media, you know, normal people that would, of course, like the situation that's depicted in the film is fictional.
Sure.
And it's set in the near future. It's an anticipation piece, but I think all the elements are already there in a way. And so I really wanted like the militia group to be depicted as close to what I was seeing in my Facebook feed, you know, normal people who just happened to be like stuck in their echo chambers and never get to see the opposite side. So that's kind of what Rebel's about.
Yeah, it's so interesting to, you know, being open to other people's perspectives, and yet sometimes that actually shuts us down. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, because like for 3 years, my Facebook feed was all over the place. And, sure. and I started like taking distances with that, because if I started I try never to reply to everything I was seeing, because I didn't want like to participate in that at all. But now I've started like deleting those people, because, you know, it ends up being toxic, even though they're on the surface, they're nice people. But like the discourse is so. You know, opposite to everything I believe in, it gets really toxic after a while.
What is it? Why is it? Why the division? You know, there's a line. I think there's a line in the film. You're not from our country. Mm-hmm. Where does that even kind of come from? Is that some sort of innate selfishness that we all have to fight against? What would Freud have to say about this? You know,
it's fear and lack of education for sure.
Mm.
Like I think you're based in Toronto, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I come from Sorel, which is like a small town, like about an hour from Montreal, where there's basically no immigration at all.
Right.
And, you know, that's why I said, like, I could recognize my aunts and my uncles in those groups, because like, for sure, the people that were around me when I was growing up, like they tended to gravitate towards those ideas as well, because they just were never exposed to immigration at all. So it's a lack of, you know, lack of education, and it's a lot of fear. And, you know, it's also, I think, the reason why I try to make these films, because, you know, watching a film is a way to, like I said, to spark debates, but also to educate in a way. Without being patronizing or anything, but to try
right.
to get
well,
people to reflect.
Sure, the film sure doesn't come across that way to me at all. Can you tell me a little bit more about some of the folks who saw the film and reacted with, oh, this is over the top? You know, like the Facebook photo scene, for instance. Yeah. You know, hey, let's get a shot for Facebook. Like, really? Right. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, it's meant to be absurd also.
Yes, like, of course.
It's meant to be a little over the top, but you know, like I often get like the question, like, did you ever get any death threats or anything? Like, did it really, really piss off anyone? But
sure.
I never really got that bad, you know. There's been, once the film started circulating on the internet, there's been a few comments on YouTube and stuff like that, but
of course
nothing like really as bad as you'd expect. Like, so I don't know, I guess people sort of, it's not an activist movie, it's a family drama at its core, so people tend to look beyond the politics, I think, which is like, it means that the film is efficient, you know, because it can reach beyond borders.
What I love is that you've told this story through the eyes of a couple of children, I suppose, but one in particular, and we obviously see various perspectives, but do you think that at some point we lose that, I don't know, that childlike sensibility? Of course, it's a mm-hmm. sense of wonder and mystery, and, you know, we don't believe in Santa Claus anymore, and some people never believed in Santa Claus, and that's okay mm-hmm. too. But do you know what I mean? Is there a sense in which dialogue, conversation, being open as kids, it's just, well, this is the world that we live in. There is no other way.
That's kind of the difference between nature and nurture. Mm. There's a part of that in
which
the
is
film
very
sure.
much a theme in your film.
Yeah, of course.
Very much.
There's definitely that in the film, but there's also like faith in the next generation. Mm. Like, I know for sure, like I said, I come from a rural town outside of Montreal, and I know for sure that I'm much more progressive than my parents were. And I know that my kids will most likely, like, my kids are going to grow up in Montreal. They're going to be exposed to immigration much more than I was when I was a
sure,
kid. And I'm
sure.
much more open-minded than my parents were. So I think like this is like a work in progress. And I try to believe like that we're only a few generations away from getting rid of racism. Like that's kind of the hopeful conclusion in Rebel, that, you know, we can put faith and trust in the next generation.
So what are you, do you have any desire to turn this into a full length feature, or is that potentially another project down the road? Is a theme that you might return to?
I don't expect to turn Rebel specifically into a feature. I think like it works in a short scale, but sometimes I feel like people that try to stretch out their short films, it tends to not be as good as the short film, because right. you end up realizing that, you know, there's a lot of content there. It's very dense, but if you stretch it out, then it's not as effective. So I don't think I'm going to stretch it out to a feature, but I am working on a feature film right now that's also on social issues and also about immigration, but not specifically on right-wing extremism.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't help but at moments think of American History X came to mind as a film. You know, there's the contrast and the juxtaposition of how is it that the children can see, or at least this child can see at a certain point, and how is it that the adults cannot? Mm-hmm. You know, right. there's that wonderful line when the father's on the phone, what are you going to do with the kids? Mm-hmm. And isn't that kind of what the whole movie is about in a certain way? Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many beautiful themes that you mm-hmm. that you unpack here. And I so love that I mean, to me, Pierre Philippe, this is a film that people could be writing essays about for many years to come. I truly believe that, because it is layered, it's nuanced, it's complex. Human nature, right? Paradox and contradiction. Have you seen the film with David Thewlis, The Boy with the Striped Pajamas?
No, I haven't.
There's an opening scene where you're at a party, and it's about Nazi Germany, and you're at this party, and they're serving hors d'oeuvres, and there's entertainment, and the kids are running around, and they're playing, and they're having a great time. And essentially, what we're seeing is the celebration of a commander who's been promoted within a death camp.
Okay.
And this crazy, absurd contrast, this contradiction of how could folks who were presumably normal family folks in the middle of something like that not see what was actually going on? And I mean, for me, this is a question that keeps coming up with your film as well. And obviously with all that's going on currently, with the inauguration happening in the next couple of days in the US, big political changes ahead of us. I just thought, I'm always fascinated as to, you know, and you mentioned the echo chambers. How do we get outside of that? How do we get to outside of ourselves?
I think it's kind of like, that's what I said, it's what I try to do with my films. It just sparked debates. But that also what the film shows is that, like you mentioned, the parents are like, they don't see the suffering around them. But the film is about, you know, a kid that reacts, and then the father who sees his kid reacts. And it's like, that's the ending is kind of very ambiguous, and it leaves open to interpretation. But my interpretation of it is that probably the father, as you know, has seen that it affected his child, and that might lead him to question his belief. And you know, that's once again, that's the hopeful ending. But and you know, all the interpretations are valuable, but that's what I'd like to believe, that he was moved by the fact that his own child was moved by what happened, and that's going to initiate his perhaps change.
I love how you use a stray cat and an ice cream sundae so profoundly. Actually, it really is quite remarkable. And I mean, I you know, for again, for all its you know, kind of tough subject matter, in a sense, it really, to me, is a hopeful film, because this really is about reminds me of Magnolia as well, you know, that mm-hmm. that idea that these ways of being, our worldview penetrates so deep. How do you ever come outside of that? And the only way, it seems, I don't know how you would feel about this, mm-hmm. but is it within a community?
Right. And listening.
And by listening, beautiful.
Yeah, listening to each other for sure. Which is like, it's hard, especially in social media, once again, because that, especially within the pandemic, because social media is now like our main place of interaction with each other. And social media tends to like favor everything being polarized rather than listening to each other. And I think like I personally like stopped using social media I use it like in a professional manner. I post like my stuff for my career and stuff like that. But I try not to get too emotional in debates, because that's when like very, very polarized opinions scream at each other. And there's never any middle ground on social media. It's always like whoever screams the loudest is going to get like more likes. And that's, I think that sort of defines the current era for sure. And the symptom of that is what's happening in the States right now, for sure. Like, people are super polarized on each sides and never listening to each other. And I think we need to like calm down and try to reach a middle ground and try to listen to each other and try to, you know, tone down our own beliefs a little bit so we can try to find some middle ground somewhere. You know, it's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress. It's so connected to conversation and dialogue. It's so interesting. You know, without social media, you know, without this technology, you and I wouldn't be doing this interview today. And, you know, ironically, and I've said it many times, my podcast is called Face to Face, and we are sort of face to face, you know. The philosopher Jean Baudrillard would have something to say about this, simulation and simulacra, right? But we are face to face. We've met. We've developed, or we've begun a relationship, you know, and isn't that an amazing thing?
Yeah.
Isn't that a beautiful, beautiful thing? Somebody in remote Mongolia, Pierre-Philippe, can watch your film.
Right.
That is a beautiful thing. But then you can talk about the division.
The toxic aspects of that also. That needs like, we need to find a way to temper, to tone it down a little bit at the same time.
We need to find a way to tone it down a little bit. I think that could be one of the sound bites. Maybe that'll be my social media post. How's that? Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Sounds hashtag relax. Hashtag tone it down. Yeah. That's right.
Take a chill pill.
So just before we, and I'm so sorry, but we're coming close to at the end of our conversation on Face to Face here today. And by the way, folks, if you've enjoyed what you've heard here, please, you know, like this on YouTube. Speaking of social media, follow us there, and we'd love it if you leave us a review on iTunes as well. Pierre-Philippe, before I let you go, though, why don't you remind us again where can people see this film? And by the if people have joined halfway through this, I mean, by the sounds of it, pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, it's available on YouTube worldwide, Vimeo Staffpix worldwide. It's on Short of the Week also. If you're in Canada, it's on CBC Gem and 2TV and Crave in Quebec also. If you're in Europe, it's on Arte. If you're in Eastern Europe, it's on HBO Europe. So it's pretty much everywhere.
It's pretty much everywhere. And well, listen, what a beautiful, important and meaningful film. It's, I hope everyone gets to see this, Pierre-Philippe. I wish you so well. You're welcome. And I wish you so well with all that's coming ahead and your feature. How's the funding going for that? Just on a practical level, are you getting there? Or?
Yes, I am. We're shooting this summer. Yeah.
Fantastic. Oh, good for you. Well, I wish you well with that. And thanks again for a wonderful, insightful chat. We've been talking here today with Pierre-Philippe Chevigny about his new film, Rebel. Thanks so much for your time today on Face to Face.
Thanks for having me, really.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.